The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every week we work our fingers to the bone to make sure you get the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And today is question and answer day. First Wednesday of the month usually is, and that means it's kind of like an open mic day. If you have a question about real estate, whether that's about buying, selling, financing, managing, renting, wholesaling, marketing, whatever, today is the day to ask that question. There's a couple ways you can do that. One is by emailing it to vinaradio@gmail.com. That's V like in Victor, E-N-A, radio, @gmail.com. The other way, and the way it's more likely to make sure your question is answered, because sometimes the inbox piles up and we don't get to questions by the end of the show, it's 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. So while we are waiting for your burning questions to come in via phone or email, a couple of things going on this week. The Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati is having its monthly Cincinnati area chapter meeting tomorrow night. And the topic is how to do real estate when you also have a job. And that's a big thing for a lot of folks. Almost nobody starts out in real estate like, oh, hey, I'm full time. I'm starting and I'm full time in real estate. Like, it just normally does not work that way. So we've got a panel of folks who are currently running successful real estate businesses and also have a job to talk about how they manage to do both of those things at the same time. What people are they using? What tech? What systems? What time management? What support do they have? Would they recommend it to other people? All that sort of stuff. That's at the 7:30 meeting, at the 6 o'clock early bird meeting. We have Miss Anita Johnson talking about what to think about if you're thinking about quitting your job or retiring early. Because it's way more than just, hey, is there enough money in the bank and there's enough rent coming in? It's way more than that. Way more than that. Things you need to consider about financial planning and health insurance and 401ks and all that sort of stuff. So if you're in the greater Cincinnati area, come on by tomorrow night. You can get your seat reserved and all the details and location and all that at cincinnatirea.com. Tonight is the monthly tech and tools focus group of Cincinnati REA, and it is the one focus group that we have that is open to non-members. So wherever you are around the country, you can attend this one because it's on Zoom. And the topic tonight is software that actually helps you estimate rehab costs correctly. That meeting is at 6:30 Eastern time this evening. You can get your link to join in and see a software demo with Damon Remy at cincinnatirea.com. I feel like before we start answering questions, we need to say that for our listeners and Inner Circle members and summit attendees who are in North and South Carolina and Florida and Georgia and Tennessee, we are thinking about you all. I've been busily calling or texting or emailing everyone that I know that lives in those areas. And so far, everybody that I have contacted is okay. But if you are, if you're in some of those areas, you probably can't hear me right now because you don't have electric or water in some cases, or cell phone service in some cases. But you might want to go to the Summit Investors page. It's called Summit Real Estate Entrepreneurs Helping Investors Helping Investors on Facebook, because there have been some offers. We know that there's some of y'all who there's no time when you have been told that you could have electric and internet and water and all of that sort of stuff. And there's been some offers made about if somebody needs a place to stay. You know, real estate investors often will have a vacant unit or an Airbnb that they can repurpose for your use or something like that. So you might want to go on that page, let us know you're okay, and if you need anything, ask for it. Okay, so question and answer week here on Real Life Real Estate. We're going to start on the phones and talk to Catherine in Columbus. Catherine, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi, Dina. How are you?
Doing good, Catherine. How are you?
Good. Thank you. I'm kind of at a loss. I feel like this is a really broad question, but it has to do with auction.com. And I've been looking at properties, and I do see their disclaimer about do your homework, look for liens. And I'm wondering if you can elaborate on that some. I wanted to ask you first if you've ever used auction.com, and then also other than utility liens, possible family members that may have interest in the property, what should I be looking for?
Okay, so let's talk about those auction sites in general, because that, like, there's different ones in different parts of the country that sort of do the same thing, and some of them do different things, and the rules are kind of the same. It doesn't matter which auction site you are looking at, how you would pursue those leads is going to be about the same. Now, I suspect that some of what you're looking at there is actually foreclosure sales that this auction company is acting as a third party agent for. And those are going to be identified, right? It's going to say that this is a whatever county sheriff sale or foreclosure sale. And those are going to operate under slightly different rules than other auctions that they because they
foreclosures.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And they don't, none of these, not even the companies that are serving as third party auctioneers for sheriff sales and trustee sales and so on, they also have other kinds of auctions that they do. But let's deal with the one you're looking at, which is, the one that is the foreclosure sale. So here's the deal. All foreclosure sales in Ohio and in most places are what is called as is, where is sales. This is not the auction company that is making these rules. This is state law that is making these rules. And what as is, where is means is there is zero guarantee that the title will be clear when you get it or about the condition of the property when you get it. And again, that's state law. That's not the auction company saying, we're just not going to tell you anything. That's the way those sales work. So, and also the sale is final. Like you, if you're the winning bidder, you have to go ahead and buy the property, even if you find out something is wrong later, because if you don't, in the state of Ohio, you're like in contempt. Like you can't just say, oh, I'm kidding. You know, I found out a month later that the house has a giant foundation problem and I am not going to buy it. Like that's an actual crime. So what do you do before you bid on one of those sales? First thing you're going to do is you're going to go to the county site where the foreclosure suit was filed in the first place. Here in Ohio, that will be the civil court. So the clerk of courts, Franklin County Clerk of Courts, Hamilton County Clerk of Courts, Montgomery County Clerk of Courts, wherever the property is. And you're going to read through the documents and you're going to see whether the lender that's foreclosing named any other creditors in the suit. You might see that, you know, so we're naming Joe Blow, the guy who's in foreclosure, but we're also naming, Visa and, this company and that company. The thing you want to look for is, are they naming any governmental entities other than the tax collector? Because sometimes you'll see that they're also naming the IRS. Now, why is that important? Because some of those government liens, particularly IRS liens, actually don't get cleared by the sale. So if you buy a property at a foreclosure sale and you know there's an IRS lien on it because they named the IRS in the suit, the IRS has 80 days to come back and say, yeah, we don't think that sold for enough, so we're going to undo the sale and auction it off ourselves. And you would think that in 180 days you would have already fixed it up, right? They have to undo the sale. Like they have to, everybody has to give the money back, but they don't have to give the money back that you put into fixing up the property during that 180 days. Now it's fairly rare that they do that, but I would think twice before making a bid on a property that had an IRS tax lien on it, unless I was able to look up the lien, which you can also usually do on the court site, and it was like $2,000. Because if worse came to worse, you know, I'd just be like, okay, here's your money. Go away. Right? So that's the number one thing. The number two thing is, in a perfect world, if you had a property you were super interested in, you would go ahead and have a title search done on it and make sure that there was not, like you said, maybe some owner, two owners back who didn't sign off on the deed right, or a creditor that had a lien against the property that the lender's attorney missed. Because if a property goes through a foreclosure sale and those people who have interest in the property are not notified that it's going to foreclosure sale, their lien or interest did not get wiped out either. Now the problem is, you're not going to go and spend $250 on every property that you want to make a bid on. Because you don't know you're going to win the bid, right? Like that gets expensive really fast. So what most people do is they kind of learn where to find these liens. And again, it's usually in the county court site, and they do a little look themselves. And they say, oh, wow, look, here's an old lien that they missed from whatever company. And so that, you know, it has to be taken into account that should I be the winning bidder, I will then go have to negotiate that lien away. I may lower my bid because I know I could end up spending another $10,000 paying off this lien. That stuff to me, because generally the attorney who did the title search for the bank so that they could file an appropriate foreclosure document, they generally do a pretty good job in probably hundreds of bank-owned properties and things that I bought over the years. I've only had one instance where they missed something and I had to deal with it. The scary part about dealing with dealing on the foreclosure auctions is you have no real idea of what the condition of the property is on the inside. And I know there's that whole thing about, well, you know, drive by and the way it looks on the outside is the way it's going to look on the inside. That's true, except when it's not. I helped another member a couple of years ago because he was the winning bidder on one of these sales. And after he got confirmation of the sale, he went into the house, and which looked very nice on the outside. I mean, I will say that I actually went and looked at the house. It looked very nice on the outside. He said, when I drove by it, people were moving out. So I was like, how bad could it be? People are living there. How bad could the property be? Well, it turned out that it had one of the worst foundation problems I have ever seen in my life. Like the foundation was cracked on all four walls really badly. And the reason he was calling me was he was like, I know I can't back out of the bid. I can't find anybody who will, you can have somebody else actually purchase the property. That's okay here in Ohio. But he said, I don't know what to do because I don't want to be in contempt. And there is $40,000 more dollars worth of work on this house than I had guessed. And I said, well, you got two choices. You can go ahead and close and you can lose money on this one, or you can be in contempt of court and hope they don't actually come after you for that. And I've seen other situations where, this was a while ago, so I'm trying to remember why we saw it before. Okay. So we saw it before the sale because, you know, we market to people in pre-foreclosure, which is my preferred way to buy these because then you actually get into the house, right? If the people want to sell their house, you actually get inside the house. So we had seen it prior to the foreclosure. We couldn't come to an agreement with the owner about what they would take for it. It went to foreclosure, and then it came back up on the market as a bank-owned property, and I went back to see it again. And that owner had stripped everything out of that house. When I saw it the first time, I was like, I give you $80,000 for it. When I saw it the second time, I offered the bank $30,000. Because the owner had taken the furnace, the water heater, the electric box, the kitchen cabinets, the bathroom fixtures, and had taken the carpet, and he didn't pull the carpet up off the tacks. He took a box cutter and he cut the carpet out. So there was 2 inches of carpet around every room, and it needed, you know, when I saw it, it probably needed 20 in work, and now it needed 40 in work. So. Or 60 in work. So, bidding on foreclosure auctions is something that you do when you're like, okay, I know it's a risk, but, 99% chance it turns out fine. Other 1% chance I can absorb it. I can absorb the loss.
Okay.
At the same time, let me say, again, there are other kinds of auctions on all these sites. There's estate auctions. There's, people who just decide to auction off their house because they need to sell it real fast. Things without these complications. And I've made some really good deals over the years bidding at those kinds of auctions because in those kinds of auctions, you get to see the house and they guarantee clear title. So you might want to keep your eyes peeled for those kinds of auctions. And if we get into a real recession and there's a lot of bank owned properties, banks will auction off their bank owned properties on those auction sites. So personally, I am very hesitant to bid at foreclosure auctions unless I have already been inside the house and unless I bid on one a couple of weeks ago because I had talked to the folks had been in their house when they were in pre-foreclosure, but they just simply owed too much. So I did go and bid hoping to get it for less, but they and I already had an agreement about I was even going to let them stay a little while longer. So I knew they weren't going to strip the house.
Yeah.
I hope that helps.
Okay. Yep. That's very helpful.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, Catherine, thanks for your call. We need to take a quick break. It's question and answer week here on Real Life Real Estate Investing. Any question you have, that is actually a real estate question. Happy to try to tackle that. 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Sorry, I sound distracted, but I'm trying to do some math based on a question that came in at vinaradio@gmail.com. And, math is hard to do on the radio. And I don't mean like, you know, I can't get out my calculator and do it myself. I mean, it's sometimes hard to express the math without a whiteboard. Maybe we should go full on multimedia here, Mike. What do you think? We get a camera in here. We get like
Vina doing math.
Yes, Vina doing math. So this question is from E. Eck. So I guess I don't exactly know the name, but he says, starting off in real estate, I identified a potential seller who was an out-of-state, tired, absentee landlord who has reliable tenants. The house is worth $535, no repairs needed. The exit strategy is to keep it as a long-term rental with a new five-year lease at $2,800 a month. The market rent is $2,937. Now, before I get into the math of this, why would you give somebody a five-year lease? It seems like, okay, well, if they sign a five-year lease, then they will be there for 5 years. But two things. Number one, with a five-year lease, if they're going to move, they're going to move. It doesn't matter that you have a five-year lease. And in most places, you can't, if they move after year three, you can't collect the last 2 years worth of rent they promised you. You actually have to try and re-rent it. You can collect some damages, but in a lot of places, it's maybe a month or two in rent that you can collect. So the thing that worries me about a five-year lease right now is inflation. I think we're all about to see another bump in our insurance rates, for instance. So $2,800 this year and $2,800 in 5 years are going to be way different numbers. So he goes on to say the taxes are $11,500, the insurance is about $2,500. There's no seller mortgages or debts. Seller owns it free and clear. No debts other than his taxes, insurance, and minimal maintenance. Well, we'd like to do like the full maintenance. The seller wants to sell, but the tenants must remain due to the promise not to kick them out through lease expiration. It's fine if the tenants stay. I just don't want you to sign a new five-year lease with them. I believe this is step one, finding the deal. Are there any creative thoughts on how to make this work as a purchase or maybe some kind of a master lease with option to buy? So the general math problem that you run into on $535,000 houses where the market rent is $2,900 a month is that it has to be owner financing or you have to pay cash or you're going to be in a negative cash flow situation. If you were to pay this $535, put your, $160,000 down with the bank and have a mortgage still in the 400 thousands of dollars, I promise you that your mortgage payment will be higher than that rent. That math I did not have to do. Just at current interest rates, your mortgage payment will be higher than that rent. Even without a mortgage payment, the math I did says if you're going to collect $2,800, you have to set aside 20% of that every month in a reserve account for maintenance, vacancy, and capital expenditures. I know the house is in good condition, but things break when people live in houses and people do move out of houses. And also the tenant is not doing a thing to that roof, but it's still going bad every year. So just trust me when I say you need to set aside 20% of your gross rents for maintenance, vacancy, and capital expenditures. Well, that leaves you with $2,240. Your taxes are $958 a month. Your insurance is $204 a month. That leaves you with $1,078 a month. I assume you would actually like to have some cash flow for owning this property. So let's say that you'd be happy with $200. What that means is $878 a month is the most that you can pay every month to this owner for any sort of owner financing, whether it is a master lease with an option to buy it later, whether it's an owner carry back. $878 is what you have left to work with, and it's because of the $535,000 house price and the $2,900 rent. If you were to buy two $250,000 houses instead, in most places, a $250,000 house right now is going to rent for $1,700 to $2,100 a month. So buying two of the cheaper houses produces more cash flow than buying one of the more expensive houses. It's just the math on the more expensive houses is weird. So how motivated is this guy? Is he willing to take $878 a month and have you take care of the taxes, insurance, maintenance, vacancy, repairs? Because in that case, you could do an owner carry back loan, probably at 0% interest, and it's still going to take a lot of months to amortize that loan of $535,000 at $878 a month. Is he motivated enough that he would take rent from you every month that was $878 plus the taxes plus the insurance? I mean, really, you could pay him maybe $2,400 a month on a lease with an option to buy, because he would be responsible then for the taxes, insurance, maintenance. He wouldn't get payments in months that the property was vacant, and so on. You need to open the conversation with him about how about payments instead, and then sort of see what he's open to. The fact that he wants the tenants to say that this is a condition does make him, would put him a little higher up on my list of people to talk to, for the simple reason that he's going to have a very hard time selling that property with tenants in it on the open market. And the fact that you are willing to leave the tenants there does give you a leg up in that. So that's your math. You know, I wouldn't commit to a total payment of more than $878 a month, plus the taxes, plus the insurance, plus the 20% for maintenance, vacancy, and reserves. Told you math was hard on the radio. Let's go to the phones and talk to Jonathan on line one in Miami. Jonathan, welcome to
Life on the State. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. So the question relates to, like, foreclosure situations. There are two different rights, as I understand it. One that happens before the foreclosure, the right of, I'm not sure what it is. And then the second one is the right of redemption. And what I was interested in is if you could talk a little bit about what the strategy would be to use these two different rights that we can get the seller to sign off on, and what some of the things that we should watch out for.
So the right before the sale, I'm not sure what you're referring to. All consumer loans, This does not apply to hard money loans. It does not apply to a lot of commercial loans, but in all consumer loans, the borrower always has the right to reinstate, right? To make the bank whole, to catch up all those back payments and fees and continue on with the loan. There are a few states in which there are some very specific laws about buying pre-foreclosures, and there are 12 or 13 of them, and those state laws all say different things. One of them, for instance, says that if you as an investor buy a property in pre-foreclosure and then you sell it, you owe, within a certain period of time, you owe the seller some percentage of any profit that you made. There's one in Maryland that, without getting into all the details of it, it basically keeps you from even contacting people who are in pre-foreclosure to talk about them selling their house. There's people who can do that, but they have to have a particular designation. So if you're thinking about one of those, it could be any one of a dozen different laws in different states. The right of redemption also varies a lot from state to state. You know, here in Ohio, we effectively don't have one. The person who lost their house at the sale only has until the time the deed is confirmed to undo that. So it's like 14 to 30 days, and then after that, they have zero right of redemption. In Michigan, they've got a very long right of redemption. In some of the northern Canada bordering states, there are some very long rights of redemption, a year to 2 years. The key, again, is understanding what your state law says about it. In most states, people can assign their right of redemption, or they can sign off on their right of redemption. So in other words, they can sign a piece of paper that says, yeah, I know I've got a right of redemption, but I don't want it. But again,
is there anything prior? Because a colleague of ours who does foreclosures in Florida, I know that he gets them to sign something that permits him to take action on their behalf. I was thinking that was the...
That's probably an authorization to release information and a power of attorney. And that's something anytime you're working with somebody who's in pre-foreclosure, it's really good to get those. The more important one there is really the authorization to release information, which allows the bank to talk to you. That doesn't allow you to talk to the bank. That allows the bank to talk to you. And the reason is, it's so hard to get things like payoffs and this is a huge problem right now all around the country that I'm trying to buy this property or I'm trying to catch up this loan before the sale happens in 3 weeks and we can't get a payoff out of the lender or we can't get a reinstatement number out of the lender. I can't tell you how many deals I've either lost, and when I say I lost it, what I really mean is the seller lost it, or that it has come down to the wire because we asked for a payoff and it's 2 weeks later and there's no payoff. So this allows you to go straight to the bank and request it yourself, because otherwise we get into these, like I had one about a month ago that the seller was working with the bank, and the bank, he would call and ask for the reinstatement fee and the bank would send him a payoff instead. And we just couldn't seem to get it through to the, so finally I got an authorization and I talked to the bank. And I was like, this is not what we're looking for. What would I have to pay tomorrow to reinstate their loan? And that was, I finally got the answer. So I think it's probably what they're probably talking about is the authorization to release information. There is also.
That's a good thing to talk about though, because I mean, when I've done that, it's taken weeks for them to get back to me and then they play games and make me receive it via fax.
Oh my God.
It's just absurd.
Yeah. I dealt with, this was the same bank. Yeah. It was the same bank. We had to move the close date twice because of other issues. It turned out there was a state lien against the property and we had to find out what that was and so on. So we had to move it twice. And we finally were like, we're ready to close on Friday. Like it's scheduled. We got the money. The money's already wired. We're ready to close on Friday. Called the bank and said, we need a payoff as of Friday. Because of course the payoffs change every day. There's more interest being added and sometimes the lawyer does something else and now there's another $1,500 added. Got on the phone with the bank and said, I need a payoff as of Friday. And they said, we don't do that. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't do that? A reinstatement. What do you mean we don't do that? Our payoffs are only good for the day that you receive them. Okay, well, we've been waiting weeks to receive one at all, so are you telling me you can tell me what it is today, but you can't tell me what it is on Friday? No, we don't do that, although you could call on Friday, and we would give you the number. Well, that causes a problem with the title company, because the title company wants it in writing. And they said, oh, we don't give them in writing. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's illegal. I'm pretty sure if your borrower requests a reinstatement number in writing, that you kind of have to do that. Well, that's not our policy, ma'am. So, yeah, I mean, this is like, we've been talking about this, by we, I mean, you know, folks who talk to each other about real estate all the time for probably 6 months, that the level of just uncooperation and slowness and banks that seem to be making up their own rules, maybe a little bit, has just accelerated enormously in the last 6 months to a year. I mean, there were always some of these problems, but now it seems like every time there's a problem. So I'm going to recommend to anybody who's doing any kind of pre-foreclosure type investing or deals to keep people in their houses or whatever, do not think you're going to close it in 2 weeks. Do not tell your seller, we're going to close it as fast as we can, but there could be some hang-ups with banks and with the state giving us payoffs on liens and things like that. So, you know, we'll try to get it done before the sale happens, and we'll try and delay the sale, but there are no guarantees at this point just because we're having trouble getting information out of the folks who need to give us information for this to happen. And get that authorization to release information, because otherwise you're having a three-way conversation, right? You're telling the seller, we need this, and the seller is either asking for the wrong thing or getting the wrong thing, and they're giving it to you, and then you're saying, no, we got to do this again, and get the authorization to release information.
Private lenders, I mean, I've had problems with them. Private lenders, some of them have outright refused and told me to go look at the summary judgment online and wouldn't give it to me. So that's a real problem too.
Yeah, the summary judgment online is what was due that day. It's not what's due after the lawyer has done more stuff and interest has accrued on that. And yeah, it's really weird out there right now in terms of the practicalities of working with foreclosures, which means that the people who are willing to deal with them and know how to deal with them are in a really advantageous place.
Yeah.
So
awesome. Thanks so much, Vina.
All right. Appreciate your call, Jonathan. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's question and answer week, and we are taking calls and questions. 877-772-9658 or vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. It's question and answer week, and I've got my computer so that I can check the email questions, and we've got, I'm just blessed with a lot of questions today. Here's one from Bonita. She says, what's the best way to find REO agents to partner with to wholesale? Any advice for a newbie? Yes, Bonita, my advice to you as a newbie is don't try to wholesale REOs. An REO is a bank-owned property. Bank-owned properties, when you make offers on them, come with a whole slew of requirements and restrictions that other types of properties don't come with. For instance, required minimum earnest money. It's usually $1,000 or 3% of the offer price, whichever is first. That earnest money is not refundable if it fails inspection, because in a lot of the bank-owned deals, you don't get an inspection. Wholesaling REOs is something to do when you actually have the money to close them and then resell them. They're just so much more complicated than working with off-market deals of any sort. In fact, I recommend to newbies that until the market turns and there are a whole bunch of sellers that are desperate to sell, just don't wholesale MLS properties at all. I know you probably got told differently or trained differently, but you are talking to somebody who has wholesaled hundreds of MLS listed properties and several thousand off-market properties. And I am telling you that the risk and the restrictions on those MLS properties is so much higher than it is on off-market properties. It is just not even worth messing around with. That it was in 2008 when there were literally 16,000 REO properties in our MLS here locally at one moment in time. But again, you know, I made sure I had the money to, first of all, I made sure that I had my skills down so that I was making the right offers and I knew I could sell them. And secondly, that I, in case I couldn't assign the property before the closing, I had the money to go ahead and close and then resell. I had the money. Yeah, I was just rolling in money. No, I had private lenders who were willing to lend on those properties to get them closed. If by REO you actually meant like real estate agent, and what the question you're asking is, partner with to wholesale because in your state only licensed agents are allowed to assign contracts? Because I wasn't 100% sure if I was reading your question right. The best place to find that person is at your local real estate association, because you have, what you have there is real estate agents who are also real estate investors, and they would understand the value of, you're the one out finding the deals. They're the ones who are legally allowed to wholesale them. So, yeah, There you go. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Russ on line 3 in Connecticut. Russ, welcome.
Hi.
Real Life
how are you?
I'm good. How are
quick,
you?
Quick question. You mentioned IRS liens on a property before.
Yep.
I was confused. Did you mean municipal? Because I thought that's where the taxes get paid to.
No, I'm talking about the seller did not pay their income tax bill.
Oh, okay.
The IRS caught up with that and placed a lien against their property.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Now I should add that there are other kinds of liens in different states that are not wiped out by a foreclosure. Where the lien holders have the right to redeem, and they are all governmental type agencies. So my understanding is that in some states, the state tax department has given themselves that right to have any lien that they had against a property not expire due to the sale, so that they have the right to typically come back and undo the sale or get paid by the next owner. It's not strictly accurate to say they're quote not wiped out, because if the time expires in the case of the IRS, if the 180 days expires and they don't do anything, then it's gone.
Okay.
It's not still there.
That's not an issue. Right. Got it. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I couldn't agree more about the foreclosure stuff, the auction thing too, by the way.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thanks for your call.
All right.
Russ.
You're welcome.
Okay, question from Lena. I am a new out-of-state co-remember. I wasn't able to attend the chapter meeting about how to do real estate when you had a job. Can you share 3 to 5 key takeaways or important action items to keep in mind? I could really use some insight into that right now. Well, I can tell you that largely what the panelists were conveying about how they do both things at once was they are very careful about prioritizing their time, because, you know, none of them have just real estate and their job. They all have families and hobbies and they want to travel and all that sort of stuff. So they plan out, like, what are my most important priorities for this week and how am I going to time block it? Because, of course, one of the issues you run into is you work your job for 8 or 9 or 10 hours a day and you get home and everything you were supposed to do in your real estate business just flies out of your head because you're tired. It's just like, I know there was something, there was somebody I was supposed to call, I don't remember. So they all were people who kept, like, they keep lists and records and they have a calendar and they schedule things in the calendar, and they get kind of vicious about prioritizing, because at any given moment in any real estate business, there are literally probably 100 things you could be doing, but there's only one or two of those that's likely to lead to a deal this week. So they prioritize those things. A second thing is they all take a lot of advantage of tech and of being able to delegate. So several of them had virtual assistants who would take calls for them during the day, who could make calls during the day. Things of that nature. A lot of them had some sort of, you know, they, I think almost all of them had like a contact manager where they could keep track of mailings they'd sent out, people they'd talk to, things like that. And you said 3 to 5, and that was 2. Supportive people around them. Like, I think they all were like, you know, thank goodness my husband and kids are supportive of me in this, and they understand that sometimes I come home and I can't go out to the movie. I've got 2 hours worth of work that I need to do. So having that sort of, those sort of discussions up front, and this is what this is going to take, and you're going to support me in this, right? Because it's not forever. Because at some point, either I will be able to quit my job, or I'll be able to retire you, and you can work the real estate business. I think that support was really important across the board for those folks as well. So will there be a Zoom version of this topic coming up? We actually did a Zoom version of this topic in 2023, so I expect it'll happen again in 2025. But yeah, all the folks who are on the panel are folks you have access to as a member, so you can certainly reach out to them individually and ask them how they do it. We've got a couple of questions in the inbox, and some of them are a little bit old, but they're more along the lines of like housekeeping questions. Got one here, and I'm not gonna read the name, but he said the 877-772-9658 phone number says you're calling after business hours. Okay, so if you're listening to this between 5 and 6 Eastern time on a Wednesday, we're likely live. If you're listening to it on the podcast, we're not live. So yes, if it's 8 o'clock at night and you're listening to it on a Saturday, that number would not be valid. And in fact, you're not going to get to talk to me unless you are calling between 5 and 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. And the other question, and Mike, this is something like, let's make a note and tape it up on the wall because I always forget to say this. Somebody who signed up through WMKV for the summit says you should warn people that what shows up on the credit card is not a radio station. It is some kind of a assisted living facility. Yes, that is correct, because we do broadcast out of an assisted living facility, and they are the ones that run the credit card. So yeah, y'all who signed up for the summit deal, and you see, what's it going to say? Maple Knoll? I don't know what it says. Maple Knoll Village?
BHI,
something like that. Don't call up your credit card company and dispute it. It went to the right place. Okay. It's just that's the name that's the name of the company that charged you, but it does in fact go to WMKV. Speaking of which, those of you who are out of state cannot get to Cincinnati on October 31 through November 3. We are now offering a package through WMKV that is a virtual attendance package that will allow you to watch sessions all day long on the 31st, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And we'll also get you the recordings, the audio recordings of all of the sessions that you will miss by not being here. It is at a discounted price, $297, and it does include the same course that I was including with the in-person tickets. If you'd like to attend virtually, WMKVFM.org, scroll down to the bottom of the page and you can get some virtual tickets and support public radio at the same time. Woohoo! Win-win situation. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.